What's up, Atlanta? This is the Mouths of the South podcast coming at you from Atlanta, Georgia, in our comfy studios, U.S. Men's National Team edition of the podcast. And with me, after a hiatus, after finishing out, rounding out the Copa America, the way the U.S. Men's National Team did, back in studio are the U.S. Soccer Feed boys, Andrew and William. What's going on, guys?
Oh, it's good to be back, man. Feels like it's been a while.
It's been a little bit. How long has it been since the Copa America?
A couple months. I guess, yeah.
When was the U.S. men's national team ousted?
That glorious night against Argentina, and then the next one against Colombia. What nights were those?
I don't know, man. More importantly, we haven't complained about Josie missing a sitter in absolute months. We need to get back to this.
Yeah, no, very, very good point. So they're taking on St. Vincent and the Grenadines on Friday. Going to take on Trinidad and Tobago on Tuesday. Win both, you're in. Only win one, and then you need to, you know, hope that Trinidad and Tobago helps you out a little bit. So that is obviously you want to go into both games. You want to come out of both games victorious if you can. But if you can only win one, there's certainly some wiggle room. But you don't want to leave it a chance, especially knowing how soccer goes sometimes, specifically the U.S. men's national team. Not too long ago that suffered a 2-0 loss to Guatemala, so we all know how that felt. And
you got to look at what happened with Mexico pre-World Cup last go-around. They were on the fringes of not making it until the Mexican hero that is
Graham Zusi
stepped up and sent him through.
Yeah, Graham Zusi might have done more for the Mexican program in the last few years than the American, but...
Moral of the story is let's not leave it up to chance.
Yeah, let's not leave it up to our arch rivals to save us.
Last time U.S. men's national team played St. Vincent was in St. Louis in Busch Stadium, right? Is that what it's called now?
Yeah.
I always forget the names of these stadiums.
Yeah, anyways, they always change.
Busch Stadium, 6-1 win. We were kind of surprised because St. Vincent and the Grenadines got off to that 1-0 start, and we were just kind of like, what is going on? Yeah. But that is in the past, and looking forward, they have a chance to... rectify at least that start. I mean, they end up winning the game, but doesn't matter. Some of the bigger storylines, some of the bigger notes out of this most recent camp, obviously no Dempsey. And I'm wondering from you guys, how big of a loss is this right now for these two games?
If it is obviously a significant loss,
I just want to say obviously it sucks that he's out because of that irregular heartbeat. But life moves on, games have to get played, so. Again, how bad is this loss right now?
I don't think from a personnel standpoint it's a big loss because, I mean, I think there's more talented players behind him that could do the same things he does. I think where you hurt is the presence in the locker room, the presence on the field, the kind of mix-it-up kind of guy that's not going to back down from any sort of, you know, physical play or anything like that. So I think that's kind of where you would miss something like that. And it's kind of hard to quantify how much that's really that important, especially when you're going against teams that you're much better than anyways. So, like I said, you lose some of that edge, but you also gain more with, better players.
And... either way, we're playing St. Vincent and the Grenadines. I don't even know if I'm saying the name of the country.
Do they have resorts down there?
Is that a vacation spot?
That's
probably pretty close to where the girl got killed, a few years ago.
Oh, damn.
I mean, that's like they're all the same country to me.
He's talking vacation spots, and you're talking a murder that happened 10 years ago.
But I'm saying it's all the same country to some of us.
Someone from the St. Vincent and the Grenadines is probably listening to this and saying, you know what, I'm never listening to those guys ever again.
Wrong country, dumbass.
I mean, their country kind of sounds like the cherry stuff you put in your Sprite. But
Isn't it literally called Grenadine?
It's called Grenadine. I said all that to say... we should beat this team no matter who puts on the jerseys for the United States. And
a U-23 squad out there to redeem themselves from the Olympics.
It really should.
But there's always the chance of when we're playing a country like that on their home soil, crazy things happen. We're going to be playing on a cricket pitch or whatever you want to call it. So while I'm not really concerned about the game, it will be a little bit interesting to watch until we get that second and third goal.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be ugly, but A lot would have to go wrong.
I don't disagree, but I'm. It's not a good thing that Dempsey's out for the reason that he's out. But it does give Klinsmann a chance to hopefully, fingers crossed, whatever other good fortune symbols I can make.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, all that stuff. It gives him a chance to maybe play these young guys, and I have no faith that he's actually going to do it. But it does give him the opportunity, and it's an opportunity that it's almost – you know, you're also going to miss Michael Bradley and Michael Roscoe for these first for against St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and you know it's a prime opportunity to see what these young guys have in a game that you're right, they should win, they absolutely should win. Again, 6-1 last time, and the first one came in the first I think 5 minutes for St. Vincent.
It was an early goal.
And
everybody freaked out. Oh my gosh, they had that entire game.
I'm not gonna lie.
They had that entire game under control other than that first 5 minutes. I mean, they were taken by surprise, whatever. But I just want to see some of these young guys play, especially in this game, especially in a game where you know you're probably gonna win. You go into it knowing, you know, we're gonna handle this team, and it's not like the players you're trying to develop for the future of the U.S. men's national team are, you know, mediocre players.
They're
awesome players. So why? It's just a perfect opportunity to put them in there, see what they can do. I really want to see Nagby start. I really want to see Pulisic start. You want to see more of what they can give you in more than just
I agree.
And okay, a point I want to bring up is Clint Dempsey's obviously. All health issues aside, he is getting older.
Yeah.
Something I was going to mention is like his playing style for the U.S. national team is just not conducive to playing into your mid-30s, like where he's getting close to now. I personally don't see him on the World Cup roster. I wanted to see what y'all thought about it, but I mean...
Leave it to Klinsmann to leave off a fan favorite.
But I mean, people would understand if you left him off.
I agree. Nate asked him this before... or after one of the games on like ESPN or something, they were asking him, you know, if you got a chance to go back to another World Cup, but it was in a more alternate role, a sub role, maybe where you come on the last 10 minutes, would you embrace that role? How would it be? And he's like, yeah, I would be open to something like that. You know, I think obviously Clint's not stupid. I mean, players obviously always think they can play, but when you, how old will he be at the next World Cup?
I want to say 34.
I'm pretty sure he was 31. He'll be either 34 or 35. I mean, he'll be up there.
Yeah, it's.
We can figure this out.
I just don't think you can play at the necessary level at that age, especially the way he plays. Like
the way
you said.
He plays. And to clarify what I was saying, when Clint Dempsey is playing, especially when he has a forward in front of him like Bobby Wood was in the Copa, he likes to just play that like attacking midfielder, central forward, whatever you want to call it, role, and literally just roam over the entire field. And when he does that, there's a couple problems that I have with it. Is like if you're gonna put, Christian Pulisic in the game, you're gonna have to throw him on a wing because you can't really have two guys. Same with Nagby. I guess Nagby can play a little bit deeper, but it really kind of stunts the growth of other players when you've got a guy like a Clint Dempsey who's running around and trying to do everything. Offensively, and I mean, it works, especially when he's, 29 and, in his prime. But as he gets older, he's not going to be able to play like that, and it really is going to start being a problem when you've got a Darlington Nagby. You got other players who need to be operating in that space to be their best, and then you've got another guy who's doing it.
I think there's better all-around soccer players coming up than Clint Dempsey will be at that age. Like, I think Clint Dempsey, I don't know that he's the most technically gifted. I know he tries to do a lot of stuff. I think that the new wave, the new generation of U.S. soccer players, they're going to be more technically gifted, I guess soccer savvy. I'm not trying to take anything away from Dempsey. I just find that...
It's because of FIFA.
Yeah.
I don't want to knock Clint Dempsey because, I mean, to come from where he came from, to go to a small college, and then to have played on the national team for 10 years, that's an incredible story, considering he didn't get near the coaching that a Pulisic is going to have. And so, I mean, it's great to see, but going forward, the Pulisic style...
He's
going to
be a far better player
yeah.
than Clint Dempsey is in 2 years from
now. Oh, yeah. And I mean, that's just the growth of our program, which is great to see, but at some point, we're going to have to pass the torch. And, you know, Clint Dempsey is a legend. He's got the second most goals, I believe, on the national team history behind Donovan. And you don't want to just kick him to the curb because it's not like he's really, you know... But at the same time, at some point, he's gonna.
Yeah, and I don't, and honestly, I don't really don't think he's being kicked to the curb. Like, I mean,
yeah, obviously.
It's run its course. It's not like he's bowing out ungracefully or whatever.
Like
Clint Dempsey,
a certain other.
Well, here's the thing. Unless he has some kind of serious, like he comes back from this irregular heartbeat and has some serious issue,
like an Eddie Johnson type. Thing.
Yeah, he just or he just it just falls off the map for him. He's gonna get, I think he's 33 now. By the time I'm assuming by the time the World Cup comes around, he'll be 35. So,
do
you
think
players have played players have played in World Cups at 35? It's not unheard
of. Oh yeah, I mean, Jermaine Jones is gonna be 36. Yeah,
exactly.
And it's looking like he'll probably play too.
It's not unheard of. It's not crazy. But to me, it's more and there's other players. There's the whole Jermaine Jones and Kyle Beckerman and Chris Wondolowski. Do you really want to wait? Because basically what you're telling me is if you bring, I guess we can just go ahead and jump on this, but if you bring Jermaine Jones, if you bring Kyle Beckerman and bring Chris Wondolowski, and then you bring a Dempsey who might still have it, but you have these other players in the wing, that means that you're waiting until 2022 to really bring out the young guns.
Yeah, that's
and
that's
I don't
want to
wait that long.
That's the interesting kind of conundrum that I see with the U.S. national team is you have this group of players. They're like 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, maybe a little bit older, that are on the fringe of being regulars but aren't quite there yet. And it's like, as a coach, how do you just overhaul the whole roster,
or do you
pick and choose which players you bring in, like the Pulisic and even Rubin coming in, or you know, the Matt Miazgas, or those kinds of players who are more ready, but do you?
And
it's just like I don't know how the risk reward aspect and how you manage that, because you don't want to throw them all to the wolves in a hex where
that you can't lose, because we can't lose tomorrow.
Right. So do you bring, I don't know. It's just tough. Now, guys like Wondolowski, Beckerman, I think we could do without. Like, I honestly think we could win the hex without those kind of guys. But I still even feel like a Bedoya, Zusi, and guys like that aren't, I don't see them as mainstays in a future World Cup. So it's like, you don't want to get rid of the best players, but even though they're aging, but you also don't want to bring in the newbies, the young, the fresh faces who haven't gone through the rigors of a hex or World Cup qualifying. And I know experience, you can't replace that level of experience, and that's going to be good for them in the long run. But how do you manage the short term while also the long term?
And I mean, that's
because I will say this, that's something that the U.S. is dealing with right now with respect to the World Cup. It's because I don't see a lot of these players being on the World Cup roster, but they're the ones that are going to have to get us to the World Cup. But then if you don't incorporate the youngsters in, well, you're kind of screwed
into
2018. So I don't know. It's a kind of a weird pickle. I can kind of see arguments on all sides, and I'm not fully on one side or the other. I'm kind of on the fence about
everything.
But when
you have these opportunities to bring up young guys and actually play them, like as soon as we found out that Jermaine Jones was going back home, you know, because he hasn't played since July 4th and he's still injured and he's still recovering and all that stuff, the first question everyone asks is why'd you bring him? I mean, even if he is healthy, even if he is good, you know, if he's cleared to play by your medical staff, he still hasn't played since July 4th. Like what?
I mean,
what world do you think that's a good idea for, you know? You know, when you're trying to qualify for the hex, Kyle Beckerman, I'm in the same boat. It's just another one of those. Why do you bring these guys? Chris Wondolowski, another guy that more than likely won't be in the next World Cup.
I'll
be willing to bet that he won't be in the next World Cup, and yet you're still bringing him along. Everyone's Everyone talks about how whatever in form he is with his club is, but the reason he's not in form with the U.S. men's national and the reason it doesn't translate is because he doesn't get that starting those starting minutes
yeah, he's not
that he gets
start.
With his club
yeah.
team. That's why he only gets 20, 15 minutes every other match or so to try to get that one goal that we all want him to get. Yeah. To prove that he's worth bringing along, but that never happens because he doesn't have enough time to do it.
And it's kind of funny because on the Twitter feed, we always get so much, like, people think that we love Wando because we defend him when people are like, Wando's trash, because it's that one miss from him and everybody hates him. But, I mean, we should at least look at the facts that he's not a garbage player, but the problem is he's not getting into this team.
And he's never going
to do it. Yeah, and he's too old to, like, you know, I mean, he's on the wrong side of 30 by a few years now. I don't know what he's doing on the team. Like the guy, there's no reason he should, you know. And
you know, I don't have a problem with national team selections if it's based on current form and different things like that. It's like no different.
Believe me, I wish Klinsmann would do it more often.
Right. Yeah. Right. Because, like,
Benny Fajardo.
Sorry. Do you remember when Edson Buttle never played for the U.S. national team, hardly ever got brought in, and then he made the World Cup roster in, what, 2010?
Yeah.
Because he had this great run of form. Now, granted, I don't think he ever played in that World Cup,
He played. He just didn't play very well, I remember.
Right. I don't have a problem with guys like that coming in if they're on top form, but, you know, those aren't, like I said, they're not your staples. They're not going to... They're not long-term solutions. They're short-term fixes. And that's – I guess Klinsmann's just going to have to schedule a lot of friendlies. I don't know.
That's a problem that's always going to happen with the national team because the way that you set up is you've got U16, you've got U17, U18, and you have all these players in the pool, and only a few of them are going to really make the cut. And when you look at stats-wise, say you have 20 guys – say on the – you know, you can call up 23 guys or whatever, but you're going to have 12 to 15 guys who are always going to get caught up, you know. Just the regulars. And if, say, a person's a regular for 5 to 7 years, that means every year there's going to be, like, maybe two guys who become regulars who are going through the system. And there's always a lot more than the one or two guys that actually make the grade to be a regular. And so there's always going to be a surplus of players at the age of, you know, 20 to 23. And I think it's Klinsmann's job kind of to, I guess, discern which players he really needs to give time to and which players he doesn't.
Well, I think that's a lot why I brought Pulisic and Nagby into the Copa America and has kind of fed them into this.
Because they're definitely that level. You
yeah,
know?
And well, here's the other issue, and I know we've harped on it in the past, is you're starting to really, really see the effects of the horrible development that happened under Bob Bradley, because there's such a generational gap between the top players that are now being pushing the other side of 30 and stuff like that with the Dempseys, the even Michael Bradley, kind of Jozy Altidore. I know he's a little bit younger, but that kind of group is there's not really been a follow-up group. So you've almost skipped a whole generation. Because if you look at it, soccer in essence has four-year generations. You know, ideally you have a squad at a World Cup for 4 years. And then that group may play out. Most of that group should probably play out 8 years. It's an 8-year window of pretty solid group. Well, what's happened is we've had to stretch these players over
three windows. Basically.
Three windows yeah. without anybody coming in and pushing them out.
Well, here are the. I mean, the
and
new,
now
the
and
new,
now
the new players are here.
Yeah,
right.
The
right.
next generation of players is here. Whether we're.
But
we're
the problem
impressed
is,
with them or not, they're here.
Ideally, you want to have some assimilation.
Yeah, and there's a lot less assimilation going on because, I mean, if you look at the roster, we got young guys
and we have
old guys.
And then you have, like, the Bedoyas, the Zeusies, and those types
30,
are the...
30, 31.
And they never...
But you can't... All right, but here's the thing. You can't just bring in a bunch of young guys. I mean, look...
Yeah, that's what we're
saying. I ultimately like the mix. I mean, I'll disagree with Jermaine Jones and Kyle Beckerman. I understand...
A perfect example
Chris
of this is
but...
John Brooks... going through a World Cup, not being really called upon to do anything. I know he had that moment, but he was never supposed to play an important role in the World Cup. So he got his minutes, whatever, kind of went through the process of going through a World Cup, and now look at the benefits you're reaping because of it. He went through some struggles, I'll say that, but now he's a better player for it. He wasn't thrown into a World Cup qualifier as his first real caps and first real U.S. national team, you know,
experience, I guess.
Yeah. And that's my biggest worry is when you're going through a hex, because a hex is something that's so radically different than anything in the world. Because it offers so many weird challenges, and even Klinsmann has spoke on this. People in Europe don't understand that a hex is just a different animal. It's not really even that good of soccer.
But yeah, there's the whole story.
He's just trying to make it.
It's
all about survive in advance with that.
You go to Costa Rica and then you wake up three times in the middle of the night because somebody's pulling the fire alarm on you.
That happens more than just over here.
But stylistically, the style of play is so.
And it's just bad soccer. Especially when we play away legs, and you know, it's really hard to put players through that. The younger players through.
Well,
it.
You look at a team like Costa Rica that in the last World Cup, the European teams had real problems with them because they just don't play straight up normal soccer. It's a very grit grind.
They tried to play normal soccer against us that one time and we beat
it. It was horrible.
All right, well, we are going down a rabbit hole that we're never going to get out of. Some familiar faces coming back. Obviously, Jozy Altidore is back and in form. It's kind of a refreshing view, I guess, of Jozy, who, at least for me, I'm so negative on him because he constantly looks so bad, in my opinion. Jordan Morris is back. Bobby Wood is back. Not that he left, but he is obviously on the roster again. And just a quick thought. Would you hate it if Klinsmann played all three of them up top?
I don't think
it's going to happen, but I think it's something to think about.
I think he'd probably have to pick two.
Yeah, because I think you can play Bobby Wood out wide.
I mean, maybe against St. Vincent and the Grenadines, you can play all three of them just because it's not like they're gonna attack us with numbers.
I don't know that it would flow very well.
I don't either. It's been thrown out there that maybe he plays a 4-3-3. I don't think those three players specifically would be the ones that.
Now, if you put a Rubin in, I think he could play a wider forward role.
Or maybe a Pulisic on the other side, too. But it wouldn't be those players. I'm just curious maybe more about the 4-3-3 than anything else, considering the fact that you're not going to have Michael Bradley, the fact that you're not going to have Michael Roscoe.
I just don't even think that it's
necessary. The fact that you do have Darlington and Sacha Kljestan in there, and you have guys that don't need help, if you will, because they're not young and they're not inexperienced at the national level, and can control the midfield and know what they're doing in a sense.
Do you worry about Jozy coming in and disrupting what was probably a good thing?
Not really. Yeah.
Not enough to make it an issue.
I don't know if you know, like, I guess stylistically in the way he plays, I just don't like the way he plays.
Look, I don't. Yeah. I would have hated it if it was Dempsey and Jozy up top in a 4-2-2. Because it gives us. Yeah, it's nothing. Especially in a game against such an easy opponent. At least in our. Hopefully, it doesn't come back to bite us. But
would you start Jozy right now, or would you?
No, yeah, because he's playing great.
I probably would.
I think it's a product of the players he has, a little bit of the players he has around him. So it's kind of,
well, I mean, speaking
bad,
of the,
it's kind of bad timing in Toronto that Giovinco got hurt now and not maybe last week, so we could have seen him play without someone like Giovinco. But I mean obviously they've done it before, so it's just I think Bobby Wood's the better pair if you're gonna play a 4-4-2.
Well, I think just the way they play, I think they'd be a good pair because Jozy likes to run some, but then it's hard to see how Jozy plays because he doesn't really have the style, because we expect him to be a hold-up number nine, but he's really not that.
Well,
but if he's running with another runner, which Bobby Wood is a runner, if you put him with another runner, I think it would work better. I'd like to see it, but because, I mean, they've played together a few times, but not enough to really create some real chemistry. I'd like to see them play together, and I think the Bobby Wood style would benefit Jozy. And the thing is, like, when Jozy was scoring goals in 2013 during the Hex, he went on that streak of like 8 straight games with a goal, and we looked good. Like, as a national team, when Josie's scoring, no matter what you think about Jozy, when he's scoring, we're a really good team. And so I feel like while I wasn't overly thrilled to see him on the roster, I knew it was coming. But if he can come up with some old form, that's a great thing for us.
I just always reserve judgment based on the totality of Jozy as opposed to what we've seen in spurts.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because I think, obviously, when you have a forward that's scoring in droves, it makes everything look good.
Yeah.
When they're in a zone, everybody looks good. But I don't – you just don't see it enough. I don't know if it's going to carry over to the U.S. men's national team. I don't know. I kind of hope it does, but I withhold judgment until it happens. Just because I've heard it all before. It's like, you know, we've been down this road before with him. You know, oh, Josie's coming back into form. Blah 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 blah.
It's
comes.
Sports amnesia. You forget how bad he actually was when he was supposed to be in form.
Oh yeah.
Like I mean, and there have been plenty of times where a player in form with their club team doesn't translate to in form with the national team just because there's a lack of familiarity there. And I don't know.
But,
I don't know.
I think specifically for Josie, and again, it's almost a blessing in disguise that Michael Bradley and Clint Dempsey are not going to be in the lineup for St. Vincent, because you get to see what some other guys can do with the player that Josie is. I think Josie right now is a product of the players around him in Toronto. So I wonder, mixing that up a little bit, getting a guy that can really distribute maybe in Darlington, Sasha Kleshton, maybe having speedy guys on the wing like Christian Pulisic. Maybe that helps him. Maybe that spreads out the defense a little more. Maybe that just creates a little more that he needs in order to, you know, get that whatever extra space or a little confidence or just open up something for himself. That little bit is enough maybe sometimes for a player to really turn it on and switch.
Here's where I am more optimistic is that we are now at a place where we don't have to rely on Josie being good. Like if Josie's
that
not
is good,
we're fine. We've seen that we can score without him. You know, we don't hitch our wagon to Josie anymore being in form. Like we don't the U.S. national team doesn't go.
That's
as
not
Josie.
Good at the same time.
Well, no. What I'm saying is if Josie like it used to be where if Josie was in form, the national team was great.
Yeah, we don't rely.
No. I know that we
don't like if Josie never played for the U.S. men's national team again, we're still fine.
Yeah.
That's kind of one good thing. So I'm interested to see how it works, knowing full well that plan B is just as effective.
Yeah, and I mean we're talking about Josie a lot because he's such a polarizing figure, but I mean Bobby Wood has been playing so well, and he goes in the Bundesliga, scores a goal in the first game. You know, I feel like we're almost at the point where he's. I mean, Josie's probably our secondary. I mean, they'll probably both play in these two games because we're playing smaller teams.
No, I mean he's gonna start.
But I mean, who do I have more faith in to score? It's probably Bobby Wood. You know.
Now, what do you do about?
But
Jordan
when's the last?
Morris?
But here's the thing: you haven't seen Josie play on the national level in a few months. Now. So it's gonna be different, and especially now that he's playing so well with his club team, you wonder how that translates. But again, it goes back to I think the people that are around him because when it's Dempsey and Michael Bradley, it just everything looks so much slower than what I picture. You know, a formation with Pulisic and Nagby, and I don't think I don't think he'll get in. But Sasha Kleshton,
it's not gonna stagnate the way
even,
it would.
Even Alejandro Bedoya, I think Michael Bradley slows so much down that it just stifles everything. Everything moving forward for Josie, for Dempsey. I think not having him is gonna. I hope it's kind of terrible that I want this to go so well because I want it to prove that we don't need Michael Bradley. But
I don't need this.
Andrew has been
saying that
since about 2008.
And I know what you mean, but it's like you need to visualize it and actually see it on the screen.
Oh, yeah,
and prove to yourself that yes, we're right.
Yeah, you need the affirmation that it's gonna work. And I agree. I think we're a lot more dynamic without a Michael Bradley in there. I think we'd be a lot more dynamic without some of these older guys in there. Because I think what Nagby brings, he brings an element that Michael Bradley will never bring. He brings an element that a lot of guys in our midfield that we've had haven't really brought, and that's the ability to affect the game both with the ball and without the ball. Like, Michael Bradley doesn't affect the game without the ball. I've never... Like, he doesn't have a presence. I mean, he kind of does the easy stuff. He he tries to do to be more dynamic, doesn't really work. But I think Nagbe's the type of player that kind of draws your attention. Whereas I don't think Michael Bradley has ever been that kind of player defensive players have had to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think Michael Bradley has moments, and beyond those moments, he really doesn't
contribute
much. Well,
Nagbe's such a dynamic. He drives at people. Like the goal Pulisic scored, I think it was, where he just drove at the defense and passed the ball. Like, it's very simple stuff, but he provides that attacking, just dynamic nature to his game that Michael Bradley doesn't. Now, what do y'all think about a midfield with, like, Michael Bradley playing a defensive midfield that all...
But we've done that before.
And
he basically does that now.
Yeah, well, that's what
I'm saying. That might not be where Klinsmann wants him, but he basically does that now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that's obviously his better position, but I still don't... I just don't... I don't see how Michael Bradley is integral to the U.S. national team. And I hope that we do really... But see, even if we do well, we're all going to look back and be like, oh, well, it's against
those guys.
Well, of course, anybody could look good against them. But I just want to see the flow of the play, more so than the result at the end. I just want to see how we play as far as stylistically and different things like that. Because I still think you could take a lot from even going against a team like this by watching the players and how... You know, the free flowing, the attack works.
My mindset is that I hope he plays the young guys, but I kind of almost write off the fact that Paul Arriola is on the team or Kyle Beckerman. As much as I don't want him on the squad, he is on it. And Graham Susie, I have a feeling all three of those guys are going to play over any of the
Probably.
Young guys.
Probably. I mean,
if this is the game that Darlington Nagbe should get to start for this game.
Oh yes,
absolutely, I mean, get to start. For
this game. Is a style of game like. Because the problem is when teams sit back against us, especially when it's like away in a CONCACAF against on a crappy field, and they're just going to sit with 10, 11 guys just sitting super, super deep. You need a player like Darlington Nagbe to really open up the game, do something. Because what will happen
that
is
can break someone down.
If you put a Graham Zusi, and then like watching Sporting Kansas City with like Graham Zusi and Brad Davis, they would just, I don't know, they just don't really do anything. They'll try to look for that final ball, but if... Like,
yeah, it's just like pass it around, side to side, east to west.
Yeah, you know, the classic Arsenal, whatever you want to call it, where you have the ball and then nobody's really trying to make that pass or run at somebody, and then you're just hitting pointless crosses into the box. Darlington Nagbe is perfect. This type of guy who's going to run at a defender, make something happen.
He's going to at least draw somebody out of position. Because, I mean... Teams that sit back will let you pass the ball side to side all you want, but you really start drawing defenders out when you start attacking them. Now, granted, they'll close down on you, which is a good thing, but it sets things in motion. It doesn't allow teams just to sit back and stay. You know, you start pulling defenders out in one or two, and all it takes is one person not covering or whatever, and these teams aren't the most tactically sound, you know, defensive units.
I think about the way St. Vincent will probably play, and we all assume that they're going to just sit back and let the ball come to them and try to counter. But I said, and maybe speed isn't what you want in this game. Maybe guys like Pulisic and even Sasha, who's more of a...
And it's not necessarily
Sasha benefits from the counterattack, and I don't think there's going to be a lot of opportunities, especially against St. Vincent, for counterattacks. Maybe against Trinidad Tobago, maybe he gets in later in against St. Vincent just to see what he can do in a few minutes or whatever time Klinsmann gives him. But I go back to the Darlington Nagbe thing. It's just perfect for him because he's not.
He's not a possession side.
He doesn't
side
rush
passing.
Anything.
Yeah.
Like he picks his spots and knows when to attack a back line or attack a defender. Whereas if you don't have that, you're gonna be side to side passing, and we'll still win doing that. Like, I mean, even if we start Zusi and Bedoya and all these Beckermans and whatever, we're still gonna win.
I don't have
the
a problem
game.
With Bedoya.
I think Bedoya is underrated in some ways, or isn't appreciated in some ways. I watched him play up in Philadelphia, or sorry, up in New England against
for Philadelphia.
Yeah. But Doya is actually very active. He's a lot more active than I would have thought. When I actually, because, you know, when you're at games, it's easier to kind of see players.
Movements
off the ball and different things like that. He's a lot more aggressive than I thought.
Yeah, that's something I noticed when I watched him live in Jacksonville in I guess it was 2014. He's a very physical player. That time he was almost playing like an inverted wing, and he's a very active player, and he loves to get stuck in. He's not going to be as flashy, and he's not going to be as easy to watch as a Darlington Nagby. And I think that's part of the reason that people love Nagby and Pulisic so much, is they're very pleasing
aesthetically pleasing,
as opposed, but there's nothing wrong with that style of play, you know, I mean, you have to have both.
Yeah, and like I said, going to that game and seeing him live gave me a better appreciation for him than you see on TV. And maybe I'm the last one on the Bedoya bus or whatever, and people may be saying I'm an idiot because I didn't see this all along, but It's not eye-catching. He doesn't do things that are eye-catching in a traditional sense. Like, he's not a wow player. He's not a flashy player. But there's some intricacies and nuances to his game that go unnoticed a lot, because you don't really get to see it unless you're, one, focused on it, and two, and by the way, he played, I'm forgetting the guy's name, that he plays in the midfield with, but man, I was just impressed that night. Maybe it was, I don't get to watch a whole lot of Philadelphia Union play, but I was very impressed with him.
Here's the other thing. So,
especially in that system,
Klinsmann brings Kellen Acosta. Sorry, moving on to like the defenders. Yeah. Klinsmann brings Kellen Acosta, and what a lot of the conversation has been is that he is going to be the left back, or he's there to play left back. It makes me wonder, maybe Fabian Johnson is going to end up playing at least some in the midfield. As
I mean, this is a good time to put him in the midfield, because it's like, okay, he's our best player.
I know he's listed as a defender, but that really means nothing
to us. To Klinsmann, it means nothing. I don't know how I feel about Kellen Acosta, because he plays very well as, what, a central midfielder for
He's a central defensive midfielder, yeah.
I still don't know if I trust him on the ball at a high international level. He's a young player, so I'm not saying I'm writing him off. I'm saying at this point in his career, I don't know how much I really trust him, even as an outside back, in terms of just being technically sound enough to play at the international level. But I guess this is going back to, you got to give the young guys experience. This is a good time to give the young guys experience.
Well, it's better than Timmy Chandler back there. Brought him.
That's not saying much.
Yeah, but I mean, but still,
let's not bring that up.
It's just another case of Klinsmann playing guys out of position. Let's see, what else? You got Steve Birnbaum, who hopefully gets some good minutes, at least in against St. Vincent. And then, of course, DeAndre Yedlin making his return to the national team after being transferred to Newcastle, or loaned to Newcastle.
Transferred, that's right.
Transferred to Newcastle.
Back to Kellen Acosta.
Michael Orozco also out for this game against St. Vincent.
I was going to ask y'all, I've kind of got the feeling that Klinsmann sees him as a left back, and that Klinsmann believes, kind of like back when Jeff Cameron was playing in the midfield for Houston, it was like, just because the lack of, you know, technically sound players in the MLS, not trying to dog on the MLS, but they, you know, you tend to put your better players in the midfield, or if you can, you know.
It goes to that whole, like, all athletes play shortstop.
Yeah,
that
type of thing.
Stuff like that.
Do y'all see him as an outside back?
Who? Jeff
Kellen
Cameron?
Kellen Acosta.
Oh, Kellen Acosta.
I don't think it matters. I think what matters is that it's another case of Klinsmann not bringing up a real left back playing another guy at a position.
I was just saying, maybe Klinsmann sees him as a real left back.
Oh, no.
Oh, you don't think so? Okay.
No.
Because I mean, I've watched.
I think he sees him as a guy that can play left back.
Gotcha. See, I've
just like
watched
see, just
him
like
play
just
MLS
like just like
times.
Fabian Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, I've probably seen him play in the MLS 3 times a year, so it's not like I.
Who, if y'all could pick anybody, who would you put at left back? I mean, not just from the roster right now, but like in our pool of players, like who are you putting out there? I think there's just kind of a gaping hole of. Nothing really in that.
I would rather see a player that actually plays the position. Maybe, I don't know.
Well,
Really anyone that just plays the position at a higher level than anyone else.
I'm gonna
either an MLS or any other European league, whatever.
I'm gonna open an entirely not good can of worms. But you know, Klinsmann was talking about this the other day, or probably a few months ago now, that the way the roster's set up in MLS with the very strict salary cap, they don't have enough money to really pay their left backs and or their fullbacks enough. So nobody really gets developed. That you don't get a good player and develop him as a fullback.
Yeah, if you're gonna find someone
that's capable.
You find somebody who's capable, usually from the second tier of whatever league, and you pay him $80,000 or $90,000. You know, you don't really have time or you don't have the money to develop an American fullback.
If you're gonna put your money on in a position, that's one of the last ones you'd put it in.
I mean, that or keeper. Because I mean, the DPs are gonna be the attacking midfielders. They're gonna be the strikers. You don't just sit around and say, wow, you know, if that team had a great right back, they would be, you say, oh, wow, if they had that goal scorer, if they had that number nine, right, or maybe the attacking midfielder. And so the American soccer system, I guess MLS in particular, we don't really develop players. It's the all good players play shortstop. The best athlete plays quarterback on the football team in, you know, high school.
And honestly, like, DeAndre Yedlin just kind of burst onto the scene out of nowhere.
I mean, well, he was playing in college.
Yeah. He played at Akron?
Akron, yeah. And,
I mean, he's a lot like Dempsey in that way. He was not some youth system player that was kind of brought up through the ranks. I don't really know his story fully, but I think he kind of became a... He's like, oh, well, he's actually a lot... He burst onto the scene with Seattle.
And...
Yeah, he was a homegrown with Seattle, and then ended up getting
he played 1 year at Akron.
I forget.
He's kind of your prototypical.
But if y'all remember back, people wanted him to move to the midfield. They're like, oh, he's this, he's that. And then Caleb Porter, who was actually his college coach at Akron, was like, yeah, he's just not technical enough. Let's stick him back in, you know. Let's stick him back at fullback. And it's kind of like that mentality is why we can't, why we have a lot of trouble. No, he's definitely an exception to the rule.
But look, for these two World Cup qualifying games, it's fine. The future of the U.S. men's left back of with the U.S. men's national team is still super undetermined. But I just no one understands. No one understands. Neither do we. Neither do I. I don't know. No John Brooks.
Nope. Yeah,
I saw the tweet. It says John Brooks hurt his back carrying us all summer, so he had to take a break. And I mean, that's kind of, you know, apparently it's not a terrible injury, but there's no point in risking it when you got the full season. He's about to play for 9 straight months.
Well, that's the other thing that we don't always take into consideration when we're talking about national team call-ups and stuff is the club element of. Like, there's probably some behind-the-scenes stuff that, you know...
Well, it's an international break for everyone, isn't it?
Yeah. No. Oh, okay. I get that. But, like, there's probably times where, like, for example, John Brooks maybe not... He may be healthy enough to play, but his club probably doesn't want him to go out and play for his national team.
He did play last weekend, so...
Yeah, I mean...
Maybe something happened toward the end of the game.
They said it was, like, a nagging injury, and...
Okay.
It's one of those things, it's almost like a brownie point system. Like, if he really wanted to go play, he probably could have talked his way out of it. But it's probably really hard to convince a very good Bundesliga team to be like, oh, okay, can I go play against some country you've never heard of?
No, in a very physical CONCACAF league.
Yeah, in a very physical, sometimes dirty CONCACAF away game. I mean, I don't blame him, you know?
I mean, it's no different than...
There's no need to get
like,
hurt.
Like, even from a fan perspective, when you're watching your, whether you're a Man U fan, Arsenal fan, or whatever, you don't like seeing your own players go and play for their international team because you're always worried that they're going to get hurt. Uh-huh. Well, if we have that fear, I imagine there's some level of management on these players that says, hey, I don't want you to go play this weekend, especially if you even have the slightest of injury. Because... If John Brooks, like I said, if he does have even just a soreness or whatever, it's not in the best interest of the club to say, hey, we'll let you go play. You know, you go play for two games that are largely winnable without him.
Yeah, if they don't win these games, it's not because John Brooks wasn't there.
Yeah. No.
And it's one of those things, it's like you can't just continue. I feel like if he comes back to him and says, I need to play in these other friendlies when he's kind of hurt and it's maybe a bigger game, they're probably going to say yes. There's no need, you know? And so that's why I'm not going to be angry at John Brooks. Like.
Well, and another thing about the roster is Klinsmann did come out and say that he's going to try and ride I don't know if this is just coach speak, but he's basically going to ride the momentum of the Copa America performances with the same group. No, the old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing. He's just kind of riding this team.
Which is very anti-Klinsmann because he tends to just change things for no reason. So, I mean,
Well, sticking with the same players doesn't necessarily mean you have to... Yeah, sticking with the same players doesn't mean you can't change, you know, the mentality or the philosophy of the team. Again, there's no Michael Bradley. There's no Jermaine Jones. There's no Dempsey.
And maybe he's just like, let's just get through these next two games and then we'll go back to the drawing board, then start, you know, reshuffling some things.
Because I won't ever get over the fact that you're playing a team that you're going to beat and you have young guys who are more than capable. You have young guys that are probably better, better individually than anyone on that team.
I guess I would ask you this question. If you could name, I don't know, two or three players that you would actually want to come in instead of the Beckermans, the Joneses, I don't think that Jones should be called regardless.
It's not so much that I don't want it's more that I want Christian Pulisic, I want Darlington Nagby, now that Sasha's up, I want him to play. I want these guys to play. Honestly, if it were four midfielders with Pulisic,
I would like to see
I think Pulisic honestly would play up top if he played, but you know, in that winger role.
Yeah.
But I want to see Bedoya play. I want to see Bedoya obviously doesn't have a problem playing. But again, Nagby getting the start, Sasha getting in.
Sasha Kljestan's going to be an interesting player to watch.
Rubio Rubin. I want to see him get some action. I want to see him get some quality minutes. Bobby Wood and Jordan Morris up top together just to see what the future might look like.
Yeah,
it's the little things that you could do in these type of games where it you're gonna hand it to him. You can put in Josie whenever you want if things aren't going well.
He'll probably start and play the full.
No, and yeah, exactly, and that's gonna piss me off because I'm thinking we know what he is.
Yeah,
we know what he is. Whether he's healthy or not, we know who he is.
No, it will be kind of nice to see Josie maybe get some confidence with the national team.
No, yeah, I agree, and create that pairing with either Jordan Morris or Bobby Wood or whoever ends up playing alongside him. But still, at some point, you got to play.
Would you rather see Jordan Morris for this game or the one on Tuesday night?
I'd rather see Jordan Morris and Bobby Wood up top just to see what it looks like.
Would you do it in this game or the next one?
This one. The Trinidad and Tobago, I think, is obviously going to be a lot more competitive. You're going to have to deal with Kevin Jones. That back line is going to be... It's gonna be a fun night for them. Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, you got professionals that you're
exactly.
playing against.
Exactly. You're playing against actual. I mean, what was the story last time? Some of these guys were actual fishermen.
Yeah. It's like they're missing their boat. You know.
Yeah. Right? Exactly. These guys at least are professional players. I know some play in the in USL. And again, you have Kenwin Jones, who obviously played in Europe for as long as he did.
He played in the Premier League for years.
The Atlanta United connection. For Trinidad and Tobago. But that's the game where I want to see Josie, because I don't need to see him against St. Vincent. He's not whatever he gives us, he could score a hat trick.
And it's
it still tells you nothing because you're playing against St. Vincent and the Grenadines.
And it's funny because Wando came back to the national team. I guess it would have been probably 2012 or 2013, and it was kind of similar to the way Sasha Kljestan's coming back, where he hadn't played for a little while. And then he gets put on the scene against a team very similar. It might have actually been St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and he scored two or three goals, you know. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we got, you know. It doesn't really prove anything. You just got to get the 3 points. And hopefully it won't be too difficult, but I would love to see us get 3 points and get to play some of the younger guys. I don't know. Kljestan's kind of an interesting storyline. I want to kind of get y'all's thoughts about that too. Because he's 30 years old. He played... I want to say it was almost 10 years. He came up as a young guy, and he's kind of been around the team for a little while. He played last, I believe it was 2014 before the World Cup, and it was those two friendlies we had. I want to say the last game he played in was a Ukraine game.
Yes.
That was probably, bar Timmy Chandler, it was probably the worst performance I'd ever seen from a U.S. national team player. it hurt. And so, I mean, I remember I was like, oh, my God, I never want to see him play again, blah, blah, blah. I said all the same things we said about, you know, Bobby Wood. But then he comes to MLS and just absolutely tears it up. So I definitely believe he deserved the shot. I just don't know how much – I don't know what he's going to do.
Well, look, he's the most informed midfielder in MLS the last 2 years.
That's true. You know,
yeah, he creates so much, and the way that – the U.S. men's national team typically scores goals is typically on the counter or on set pieces.
Which you would think plays their style, but I think part of why he played so bad the last couple games was they put him behind Michael Bradley. And they said, okay, we've got Michael Bradley who's going to play our number 10 role, so good luck, kid. Get behind him. You know?
Yeah, and that'd be another example of Klinsmann playing people in their own position.
Yeah, and so I'm – well, I right, just go in about how bad he was. He was playing out of position. I don't know if I even trust Klinsmann to put him in the right position this time because, you know –
he's not going to put him behind Michael Bradley.
That's why if I really wish, I mean, obviously we're not going to know until tomorrow, but I really wish we could see what he plans to do with him. I wish someone would have asked. I'm sure someone did.
He probably kind of danced around.
I'm sure, yeah, brushed it off. But it's a great chance to see what he can do. I mean, he attacks the defenses. He seems to be best when they're pressing, and he starts the counters. He starts the counters, and hopefully he can help finish him. But you know, he is a tenacious distributor.
Yeah, I wouldn't put him in a midfield with. Well, I really wouldn't put anybody in a midfield with Michael Bradley.
But here's the thing: if you're gonna play four in the midfield, I'd love to see Kleshin up in at the top of the diamond, and then Nagby at the bottom.
I mean, here's the thing about Kleshin, like. If you play him, you have to play him in his right position.
Right.
And that's at a 10, let him roam, let him do whatever he wants. Now, is he a good enough player? Is he the best in our player pool at that position? I'm not going to say yes or no to that question, but it's one of those things that's like some players have trouble going from the club level that they're at to a higher international level. Okay, here's an example.
A lot of that has to do with, I think, that sometimes we like to overvalue MLS players just based on their form in MLS when it's not.
But here's the thing. At least it's comparable to what they're going to see.
Right. And I have no problem with.
And it's also comparable to a lot of the other players in our pool that he's been playing better than they have.
You go take Sasha Kljestan and then go try to play against Germany.
That's different.
I'm not going to tell you it's going to go super well.
But nobody on our team's going to go do...
No, but that's what I'm saying. It's a completely different level of play over in Europe. Not even just level of play, just a completely different style.
I didn't know if y'all were talking about going forward after these two games, if y'all are just talking about just qualifiers alone.
Well, it just depends on how this goes. Yeah. I mean, imagine seeing him put together some quality passes into the box, create some legit chances, numerous times. I don't know how you could ignore that. Basically, if he were to be doing the stuff that he does with New York, with the Red Bulls, for the U.S. men's national team, I don't know how you cannot.
Here's where I'm with you. If he comes in and starts putting in 9 out of 10 performances,
Here's where I'm
right,
with you.
Right, but my deal is, why would you not, and I think everyone's frustration with this is, why would you not take that guy who's doing so well, who's distributing, who is creating chances, which seems to be so rare, so needed with this U.S. men's national team. Why wouldn't you take that guy and just place him in his right position with the U.S. men's national team and see how it goes?
I think a lot of managers are just stubborn, and it's not a Klinsmann only thing.
Like, well, it seems like a Klinsmann only.
Yeah,
but I mean, if you pay it, I think this is sort of like the theory of we know our team better than we pay attention to others. Like if I'm a Galaxy fan and I'm hardcore, I could probably nitpick every little detail and say, "Oh, why aren't we doing the things that X team is doing?" But if I'm a Dallas fan, I'm like, "Oh, well, my team is doing." I could nitpick the heck out of them as well and say, "Why not this? Why not that? Look at that other team that's doing it." But it's region. I don't know what the bias is or what the term I'm trying to say is. I think. Like, for example, Pep Guardiola, he's shipping players out right and left. Jurgen Klopp doesn't like Daniel Sturridge. But, like, we're all like, well, I'd take Daniel Sturridge in a heartbeat. Why wouldn't you play Daniel Sturridge?
It's a different – you have different views, you know.
It's like Juan Mata. Why didn't Mourinho like Juan Mata? I think when players – when managers look – they see it through a lens that's probably so specific that if they don't fit that certain thing – which conversely, back to the Kellen Acosta thing, I think that there's certain traits that – Klinsmann probably sees that we don't even see, that he's like, you know what, I think that may work. Heck, he tried Breck Shea back there too at one point too and failed miserably. But I mean,
at least he tried.
Right, and that's the thing. And circling back to Sasha Kljestan, here's where I'm with y'all. I kind of like that Klinsmann's bringing him in because it's something different. You know, I know Benny Feilhaber, everybody loves Benny Feilhaber, but if Klinsmann doesn't see anything in him and doesn't think he fits, there's literally nothing that Benny Feilhaber can do that's going to change his mind. Like, if he's not a fit, or if he doesn't see him as a fit, we all may agree that he's the perfect fit.
Well, we see the talent and think, or we see the skill and we think, why is this guy not getting called up? But right. You're right. But, it might not fit the overall scheme.
And then also, it's not even a schematic thing. Maybe it's like, okay, well, if I have X player in this role and I love him in this role, I don't know that necessarily he would fit playing alongside him. So if I prefer this guy, he may play better with this guy. You know, it can go even further to it's not just an X's and O's tactical thing as opposed to, you know, player fit with one another, which, like you said, when he played with Michael Bradley, it was horrible. You know, when Kljestan played with Michael Bradley, it was terrible.
And because he knew he was going to play with Michael Bradley for the next however many years.
Yeah, he wasn't going to bring him.
Yeah. There's no point in,
But now that Michael Bradley's gone, he's at least out for one game, the dynamic or the team sheet, if you will, has changed over the last few years. So maybe now is a better time to bring Kljestan in and play him with some different players as opposed to the ones that were playing at the time.
I don't see Sasha coming back.
I don't either. I think it's happening.
Probably not, but here's the thing, like...
Unless he does some, like, crazy, crazy stuff.
But that always happens in international soccer. Players get brought in and they fill a need for a minute and then they're gone. Like, they're not staples. They're just kind of like, okay, we need them for this couple games and now... Thanks for your service.
And it should be said, it's not like we think he's a bad player. It's just if he doesn't fit, he doesn't fit. Like, you look at Clint Dempsey, when he transferred from Fulham to Tottenham, he was killing the Premier League. This was a fall, in fall of 2012, he was leading the league in goals. He transfers to Tottenham, and he didn't get the freedom because, like, when he played for Fulham, he did whatever he wanted because he was scoring goals. And, you know, they would put him on left wing, and you'd see him in the central. You'd see him on the right. You'd see him making runs as a striker. Everything. When they played him at Tottenham, he was playing. It just wasn't working for him because you know who did that? Bale. Bale was playing for the team, and he's the best player in the Premier League at that time. And Clint Dempsey's another player, and he can't get the freedom to do what he wanted, and so he didn't score as many goals. You know,
I mean, it's no different than the argument we were talking about with Josie playing with Clint Dempsey.
Yeah, and
which kind of is funny because they really don't fit. But
yeah, and so the thing is, it's like, okay, was Clint Dempsey a good enough player to play for Tottenham in 2013? Yes. Was he one of their best 11? Yes. Did he fit on their team at all at the time? No, they just bought him because he was a good player and he was scoring goals. And it's like, that's kind of how I feel about Kljestan right now. It's like, is he a good enough player to get on our team? Definitely. Is he a good enough player to get in our starting 11? He's probably pretty close.
Same could be said for Benny Feilhaber, too.
Yeah, is he a good enough player? Yeah, Benny Feilhaber. Is he a good enough player where you're going to sit around and say, you know, I'm sorry to every other player. We're going to put him in the middle and you're going to have to deal with it. Because that's what happened with Clint Dempsey when he gets to Tottenham. It's like, no, you're just another player because we have one of the best players in the world doing what you used to do, and you're going to have to get in line. And some players can naturally adjust their games, and some players can't.
Personalities. Yeah. I think there's a lot that goes into it that we don't necessarily give Klinsmann or any manager, for example, any credit for is it's not just – like, I can look at – as a fan, I can appreciate people's talents from afar and say, oh, they're a great player, but I could also understand that they wouldn't fit in certain teams. Like, yeah. I know I'm going back to the EPL here, but Di Maria is a fantastic player. He's a world-class player. Was a horrible fit for Louis van Gaal's system, and he was awful for his entire but for that year. That
doesn't make
him
a bad player, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a terrible move. And I like I said, I don't see what Klinsmann sees, and sometimes I like to give them the benefit of the doubt, even though they make you want to.
Klinsmann makes it really hard.
Yeah,
but
I mean, I just don't think he's stupid. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And no, like I said, I don't know. That's just my opinion on Klesian. Is maybe it's the right time now. Maybe it's just.
I think it's just more out of convenience. The fact you're not going to have your main guy who's supposed to distribute the ball and Michael Bradley
and he's the guy that's
distributing the ball in MLS crazy.
I feel like if he kept blacklisting MLS players, it would be a problem. Yeah. You know, he can only blacklist one at a time. You know,
Jossie Sardes out with a broken leg.
Yeah, that's a bummer. It really sucks.
Because he was playing well.
Yeah, he was playing well. He's the nicest guy ever. You know, he was. I don't know. I wouldn't say he was a lock-in starter for our starting 11, but he was definitely a lock-in to be very close to the team. You know, from what I was reading, it's not going to be the longest injury. It is a fractured foot.
Broken foot.
So hopefully he'll come back and get to the same level he was at. But I feel like when he gets back, once he's healthy, I'm pretty sure they're going to call him straight up next time they get a chance. I would hope.
Well, the good thing is we have a plethora of attacking players now.
I mean, we definitely do have a plethora of attacking players, but I still feel like he would be a surefire call-up, wouldn't y'all say?
Call-up, yes.
Maybe a call-up, yeah. Yeah, the automatic starter, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he's ever been an automatic starter.
I don't know if he's, yeah. But I definitely say he's got to be close to the team.
It just depends on his fitness and how well he's, you know, getting back into things.
That lead foot he has.
I mean.
Good old. Maybe.
Hopefully this maybe fixes that a little bit.
Maybe they'll put some padding in there while they're fixing the ball.
What's that movie with the kid with the baseball? Breaks his arm and all of a sudden he can pitch like crazy.
The rookie.
It was the rookie.
I don't know which one it is. But hopefully that's the case with that.
Completely stupid movie.
Yeah. Did you guys see the video where he's playing against like 18 different little kids and his first touch.
Yeah, and it was still so bad. I was like, come on. No, I mean, oh man.
It is amazing how professional soccer players, and it's not just Zardes, there's plenty of examples of players that just have horrible first touches. It's like you made it to the professionals and you don't have a first touch.
I mean, he must be the most, like, he must be so athletic. You know, I mean, obviously he is. But it's like he must do so many things so well that he could still get even looked at as, you know, even looked at the MLS.
Well, I mean,
level.
He works. I mean,
he does not, work. People
appreciate the work rate.
And I don't think Altidore has the best first touch either.
I don't think anyone on the U.S. men's national team has.
No,
I
saw that firsthand. I mean.
all right. So assuming they get out of St. Vincent with a win, they're going to take on Trinidad and Tobago, and we can do this quickly. But since, I mean, it's supposed to be a preview, but this can't turn out to be more of a dissection of the roster and an overview of the next two matches for the U.S. men's national team. But
forgot to bring our St. Vincent and Grenadine scouting report.
Yeah, there you go. Trinidad and Tobago on Tuesday.
I already made fun of them once, so I can't do that again.
In Jacksonville. Kenwin Jones is the one player, obviously, that scares me. He is a lot to handle. And I don't know if you guys caught the Champions League match he was in. Against Sporting Kansas City, he was dominant.
Yeah, I don't know if it was their starting 11. I don't.
I know
think
it definitely
it was,
wasn't, but still,
but it was
he
just
looked
kinda,
good.
Like he was just, it was like he was just bullying them. Like there were some times where it was like a running back in the, you know, at a high school level where he's just too much bigger than everybody to even for them to. It was just bad. Like he was just kind of shrugging people off like flies, and because he's such a, he's a very physical presence that you'd actually want a John Brooks or somebody like that.
If you're looking at a center back pairing to deal with that,
Jeff Cameron has to be one of them.
It's Jeff Cameron and
somebody.
Omar Gonzalez,
I
guess. He's not very good in the air though.
But I think his physicality would, because I don't. I mean, I don't know.
That being said, the thing is, when we play against Trinidad and Tobago, we should be able to dominate possession enough where we're not letting him just hold up the ball. You know. As great of an athlete as he is, he's not as fast as he used to be.
No, really.
And he's really not that fast to begin with. He's a big clunker of a guy.
He just knows how to use his body to position himself to take shots, to make runs.
Dare I say a lamppost?
Yeah. A Trinidadian lamppost.
A Trinidad and Tobago lamppost.
A pretty good one. But I don't worry too much about him in a situation where they're going to be in a counterattack with, you know, him and one other guy as they sit back and defend the ball, you know.
Because I could see where Kyle Beckerman makes an appearance in that game just to stay on him, just to disrupt his movements and whatnot.
No, I agree. And see, the thing that worries me about Trinidad and Tobago is they're that next tier of CONCACAF players. I mean, CONCACAF teams that are good enough to beat the Mexico or Costa Rica or the U.S.
It's almost like they're. You know how Jamaica always causes problems? It's like they're almost there.
Yeah.
If they haven't reached that kind of
yeah,
that level.
If you want to go really stereotypical, you could say they're the same type of athlete. Because you know.
No. But you know what I mean. Yeah, like yeah. Jamaica's like that team that, you know, teams sometimes tend to overlook, and when you do that, you get bit.
And
Trinidad and Tobago is very close to becoming that team.
I mean, the same thing as
because they usually perform well in gold cups too.
Well, you watch them in the Olympics; they always have the 100 meter runners. I mean, and
well, that's
I know. I said what I was not gonna do. No, but I mean, they have like Jamaica's a difficult team because they have some quality. I mean, Wes Morgan for Leicester's Jamaican, obviously. They have some players who are doing very well in the MLS, and they can hit you on the counterattack. Trinidad and Tobago is probably – they're obviously not that level, but they do have some athletes. They do have some soccer – you know, they have some decent players at
their disposal.
They're
just not a fun team to play. Like, yeah. You know you're better soccer players.
That's a good thing. That's a compliment to that team, you know. It's a compliment to
– Yeah, embrace your style, win how you can. I'm all for it. I don't call you cowards if you play a certain way that, you know,
we
may not be beneficial.
Not to talk about that.
Oh, man. Yeah. Hope Solo drop right there. Anyways, but no, they're just a
Rest
tough team.
Rest in peace, Hope Solo.
She's not dead. Jeez.
Her soccer career
is. That's a second death reference you've made. My goodness.
Rest in peace, Hope Solo's
international
career. And possibly club career because she kind of like, just stop playing.
Like, yeah, I'm just going to throw a hissy fit over here in the corner and bail on everybody.
Okay, we got to – okay.
All right, so, yeah.
But, yeah, what I was saying is they play a certain way. You know how they're going to play. You know you're better than them. But the way they play just makes it so difficult. Because here's the deal. We've all played soccer for most of our lives. The hardest people to play soccer against are the people that don't know how to play soccer because they don't know what
so
they're
true.
Doing. Because you can't – it's hard to defend them. I mean, it's hard to attack them sometimes because they just go and flail around and, you know, whatever. It's like I always tell people with FIFA, when you play FIFA on the PS4 or Xbox or whatever, it's always easy to play against a computer because you know the way that the computer plays. It's hard playing people –
who don't know how to play because
and they're just running around kicking the ball everywhere because you can't do what you would normally do. And I liken it to playing against Trinidad and Tobago in that way because it's not that they don't play soccer. They just play a brand of soccer that's not real
pretty.
Joga bonito, if you will.
Hey.
It's not beautiful. So it's just tough. You just kind of have to grind them out and grind, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, that's how it is against, you know, the vast majority of the CONCACAF teams we play. You could say it's like that against every team other than Mexico.
Yeah, and the one exception is the fact that Trinidad and Tobago can play that way and still beat you.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, I know we lost to Guatemala, but in a real sense, we shouldn't – they're not that bad. But, you know, they're on the Honduras level. They're on the, you know, Jamaica level sort of. And they're just tough. And that's why I don't always feel good about those games. I feel confident that we're going to win, but I'm not confident in how the game is going to be played.
Yeah, I mean, this is the same team that tied a 0-0 in Trinidad. So, I mean, yeah, we should. Now, St. Vincent and the Grenadines is kind of a different story where if we don't.
Well, they're more than capable to. They're more than capable of really causing problems with the U.S. in terms of qualifying for the Hex. And, you know, two wins gets them in. If they tie...
Even if they win and tie,
There's still a chance they're just going to need some help from Trinidad tomorrow against Guatemala. That's going to be the big deal, is they're going to go into their final game knowing exactly what they have to do. And...
Yeah, if Trinidad beats... Guatemala has to win tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because because we're gonna beat Saint Vincent's and the Grenadines.
If not, it will be a.
That would put us 4 points.
If we don't beat Saint Vincent, we don't deserve to go to the Hex.
Well, yeah. If we don't beat Saint Vincent, it's gonna be a.
Yeah. So
they'll
basically,
make a movie about it.
Basically,
you know?
If Trinidad and Tobago wins tomorrow, then we're through to the Hex. Not that I it kind of pisses me off that we're even having to do the math on this. This is quite annoying.
We should have 12 points out of 4 games and not be thinking about this. But
or at least 10.
It is what it is.
Hopefully we're coming away with those games with results, and hopefully we see some of the young guys get in. At least me, I hope I see some of the young guys get in. I hope we see Sasha play, and hopefully see some good results.
I hope we see Sasha play in the position he likes to play.
Exactly.
And let him do what he does, because he's in the best form of any player we got right now.
Maybe
the exception
well.
Of Bobby Wood, but, you know, I'd like to see both of them.
And it's gonna. And what you do is you put these younger players in a position to succeed. You know, in a game like St. Vincent's and Grenadines, you're going to put your players in a position to succeed. Albeit it's still that team winning at the international level in a World Cup qualifier for a young player, regardless of who it is always going to give you a bit of confidence. And that's what the young players really need. It's not the talent. The talent's there. Pulisic, he's got talent. It's, you know, now putting your foot forward with the national team and saying, okay, I have something to hang my hat on. I did this.
Yeah, and
I got my first start. I played a full game. We won. Good.
And if there's no other reason to watch the 2 games, which there is, because if we lose, it's going to be a problem. But to see Christian Pulisic play, because he is probably the best pure prospect we've had, at least since Landon Donovan. You know, I mean, you could just. I don't know, just the way he came through the system, like so many other great players that have came through the same. Borussia Dortmund system, he's probably the best prospect we've ever had. And so, I mean, if there's no other reason to watch the games, if he's getting anywhere near the field, you need to be glued to the game as an American soccer fan, because he is like...
I long for the day to see him, and, Zelalem and Hyman
play
in the same midfield.
And his expectations are so high, but it's rightfully so, because right now he's playing at a higher level. Club-wise, he's probably playing at a higher level than any other American ever.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for him to start for Dortmund is more of an accomplishment than anybody. You know, Landon Donovan went to Bayern Munich back when Bayern Munich was probably below where Dortmund is now in terms of level of play. And he, in his prime, this was 2008, 2009, I believe it was actually 2009, and did very little, you know, and then ended up going to Galaxy, blah, blah, blah. He's already done more. Even Landon Donovan made a joke. He scored more goals in the Bundesliga than Landon Donovan had, because Landon Donovan never scored. And he's already accomplished so much before his 18th birthday, and the expectations are so high, and he's such a dynamic, such a great prospect that you just have to watch.
All right, any final parting thoughts before we wrap this up?
6 points and we're good.
Yeah, I mean, it's just got to happen. That's it. You know.
Sounds good. We'll come back at you next week, hopefully, with a post-match recap, if you will. We'll see if we can get together and do something like that, just to recap what happened.
Yeah, sounds good.
Over the past 2 games, and
maybe our third compatriot will be with us.
Hopefully. Fingers
Shout
crossed.
Out to Aaron. Shout out to Aaron Anthony.
Crossed. If you're going to Jacksonville, try to find me. I'll be there. And if not, I'll...
He'll be the one wearing the U.S. attire.
No, I won't. I won't. I
okay, can't. Colin Kaepernick.
Can't do that. Oh, my gosh.
I did it.
Like every other podcast.
Yes. I was looking for a place. I had to mention it was like a game with us. You know. You can take that out.
All right. That's a good place to wrap it. Until next time, everybody. See you later.
Bye.